Good evening, all. Tonight's reading comes from the book of Matthew, chapter 9. It's on page 974 of the church Bibles. So it's Matthew, chapter 9, verses 35 to 38. I shall begin. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and illness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field."
Wonderful. Good evening, everyone. And just want to mention the book table out the front or back, behind the doors there anyway. I particularly put together a package around the theme of mission. And some of these I mentioned this morning. I'll mention them again for those who weren't here this morning, plus some other ones. So author of The Heavenly Man, you've probably read The Heavenly Man, many of you, by Paul Hathaway. He's written this very encouraging book about what's happening in China. It's called Shandong, the Revival Province. This is just one province within China and what God is doing there. The story of what has happened in China is truly remarkable. When all the missionaries had to leave, what was it, in the late 40s, early 50s, there was a great despondency. All the work had to stop. And it seemed a very negative time. And they were writing letters, what's going to happen, you know, to the church in China? And the door was closed. When the door opened, it was remarkable what was discovered, how the church had grown and continues to grow today. So just a wonderful story. If you want your hearts to be encouraged by what God is doing right now in places like China, the Shandong Revival is one of the great books to get hold of. Another quite amazing book is this one called You've Got Libya. This is the story of Greg Livingstone. Greg Livingstone was formerly the leader of our work in India. He then went and formed the organization called Frontiers. They work exclusively amongst Muslims. I think they're the largest mission organization doing that. But this is his story. Unbelievable. He was the product of a relationship between a teenage Jewish nightclub dancer and I think it was an American GI, I can't remember all the details, had a most unpromising start to life. He was passed from foster family to foster family, and yet he rose to become one of the great missionary statesmen, really, of the 20th century. He's just retired, actually, back to the United States. Someone described this as a hard book to put down. It's hard-hitting, it's brutally honest, and it's extremely encouraging, and it's very well written. You've Got Libya. If you like it after you've read it, do pass it on to somebody else. The Great Omission. We were talking about the Great Commission. This is the Great Omission. And Robertson McQuilkin has given this book to talk more about what it means to take the gospel to the nations. SOS, Save Our Sisters. Debbie Meroff, one of the authors of For Operation Mobilization. She's written an action guide for helping girls and women at risk worldwide. Another very hard-hitting book. If you look at the chapter headings, brides at risk, child marriages, domestic violence, female infanticide, girls soldiers, honor killings, poverty, religious slaves, trafficking of girls and women. I think, not just women, I think men need to read this to see what's happening, because in much of the world, women are second-class citizens, much of the world, and this book's a wake-up call and a reminder. Anybody heard of Anthony Norris Groves? Okay, this is a man whose story has never really been told. He was a quiet Victorian dentist from Exeter who changed the world of mission and helped establish a major movement. OM is one of those who've come about as a result of what this one man did. It's an amazing story. What is amazing is that he's not better known. Interviewed in here is Patrick Johnston, author of Operation World, and George Verwer, founder of OM. And they both say it's incredible what this guy did and still how he's a quiet, undiscovered individual. I've got quite a few of these DVDs, so please have a look afterwards. And then I mentioned this morning the map of the world. I gave out the challenge. The challenge being that there are two flags at the bottom here that are identical. There are two countries that have identical flags. Who was it who actually found out what they were? Somebody here. Can you remember what they were? Well done. He spent a long time going through all the flags, and you'll find that Chad and Romania have identical flags. So I just wonder if the Chadian embassy in Romania or the Romanian embassy in Chad, they're both flying the same flags, which is kind of interesting. But anyway, map of the world, get hold of a copy of it, and you can learn about some of the capital cities of the different nations. Just really quite amazing. So once I open a map, I can't stop looking at it. And then our own charity, Amen, where we're partnering now with about 20 projects around the world, 6 or 7 of which are in India, and we'll be in India again at the beginning of next year. Inside is our gift catalogue. If you want to give a gift at Christmas that will really benefit somebody in a positive and powerful way in the developing world, then use this gift catalogue and we'll send you a voucher which you can then send to them showing what you've done with the money. And also our own monthly update. Mostly it comes by email. If you'd like to follow what we're doing, there's a form outside there. Just put your name and your email address. This is a hard copy, so it'll give you some idea of the sort of communication that we have. Great. Well, I thought just tonight I'd take you on a brief tour of part of the world. Is that okay? You don't need air tickets, but please make sure your seatbelts are fastened, your tray table is stowed, and your seat is in the upright position before we metaphorically speaking, take off. So, who's doing the PowerPoint? If you could give us the first... Here's the first slide. This gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations. Remember nations. And then the end will come. So, that's an interesting statement. It's almost a barometer, isn't it, of the second coming of Christ. It will happen when this gospel of the kingdom has been preached in the whole world as a testimony to all the nations. And so if you want to get involved in bringing about the return of Jesus Christ, then get involved in taking the gospel to the unreached. Next, please. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. I remember reading this verse and thinking, Jesus was saying these words 2,000 years ago. He was looking out on the world of his day, and he said, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. And then I thought, what was the world population when Jesus was on the planet? Well, if we can have the next... Oh, wow, he's fast. Okay. So when Christ was on the planet, the world population was 170 million, which is actually less than the population of Brazil today. So when there were 170 million, he said, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. And then the population has been increasing. It wasn't until 1650 that it reached 500 million. It wasn't until 1830 that it reached the first 1 billion. It took 100 years for it to reach 2 billion. It took then only 30 years to reach... Look at that, 1960. Some of you around in 1960. Do you realise the world population then was 3 billion? Less than half what it is today. Astonishing, isn't it? 1975... world population was 4 billion. 1987, oh, that's pretty, 5 billion. 1998, 6 billion. And 2019, 7 billion plus. So look at the change. The population has increased during a decreasing period of time. So if Jesus said the harvest is plentiful when it was 170 million, what do we say today? Next, please. Okay, here's a map of the world. Great. Now, something very dramatic has happened in the last 100 years. Really, really dramatic. If we go back to 1900, 90% of all evangelical, Bible-believing Christians were found in North America and Europe. 90%. Vast majority. There was only 10% in what we call the Global South. The Global South is South America, Africa, and we usually say Sub-Saharan Africa, and Asia. That was 100 years ago. By next year, 2020, 80% of all evangelical believers will be in South America, Sub-Saharan Africa, and Asia. There's almost a complete flip in 100 years. So the church is the biggest, the church is the strongest, and my experience also, it's the most vibrant in these areas of what we call the Global South, many of which are part of the so-called developing world. So there has been a huge change. The other thing to notice here is the amount of water on the planet, okay? Now, according to Trivial Pursuits, which is, you know, like the Bible of all truth, it says that 67.1% of the planet is covered with water. So over two-thirds is covered with water. But did you know that 4 out of every 5 people live on the coast or are accessible from the coast? 80% of the world's population live by the seaside or can be reached from the seaside. An extreme example, I suppose, would be Australia, because, I mean, almost everybody lives around the coastal area. There's, I think, only about 10,000 people in the outback. But most people live by the sea or can be reached from the sea. So, I have an idea. If we want to really reach the world with the gospel, we need a ship, don't we? We need a ship which we can fill with Christians, and then we can stop off at a port, we can send them off into the prisons and the schools and the churches and the hospitals and preach in the open air, and stay there maybe 2 or 3 weeks, then bring people back on board, sail to the next port and do the same thing again. Imagine that. God, that's a great idea, isn't it? Well, of course, it's not unique. It's being done. And I don't just mean by OM ship, Logos Hope. We've got multiple ships now. Even the Greek Evangelical Church, which is pretty small, has got its own little navy floating around the islands, visiting and sharing the gospel. The Korean church, too, has got a considerable Christian navy that's visiting different parts of the world. So any serious consideration of world evangelization should include, must include, a ship ministry, because then you're going to reach 4 out of every 5 people. And the Logos Hope is heading this way, by the way. Next year, the ship, probably towards the end of this year, is coming to the UK. Don't ask me which ports, but I hope London and Canary Wharf will be included again. See, Canary Wharf, how far is that from the sea? You know, it's about 1.5, 2 hours. But because of rivers, you can come right up into the middle of London and have a significant ministry there. So if you want to come and join the ship and experience what it is to live in an international community and to travel internationally, well, that could be something that you might seriously like to consider. We have people coming for 1 year, gap years, that's before they go to university, or the gap year after university before they start work. We have many like that. And we have 66 nationalities on board. So you can get to meet some pretty interesting people speaking some pretty incomprehensible languages. So there we are. Next, please. So let's have a look at our first Global South area, which is South America. Okay. A question for you. We'll have a little bit interactive tonight. You can see it's dominated by Brazil. Brazil really dominates South America. Every country except for two has a border with Brazil. Which two countries on that map do not have a border with Brazil? Ecuador is one. Chile, well done. Chile's another. We've just been in Chile. I haven't got a pointer, but Chile's this amazing country. It's only 100 miles wide and it's thousands of miles long. So from the north of Chile, you're in tropical forests. Come down to the south and it's penguins and snow. It's all in the same country. Astonishing. But this is one of the parts of the world where your grandparents, my grandparents, would have been praying about sending missionaries to. There was a whole list of countries that somebody was just telling me about them where they used to really concentrate on praying because they were sending missionaries. So your grandparents would have prayed for Nigeria, Brazil, India, China, Philippines, Ethiopia, and Indonesia to send missionaries to these countries. Today, again, it's complete reverse. Those that used to be countries that we would want to send missionaries to are now sending missionaries from. And so we've seen this incredible change in a relatively short time. So here we have Brazil. The ship, by the way, the ship right now is in Brazil. It's in the last of five ports. It's been to Rio, it's been to Sao Paulo, and it's just about to finish. Just remarkable. I'll just give you one story, okay? I was preaching, not with the ship, but in a church in Brazil. It wasn't that big a church. And I was speaking on missions. And at the end of it, I made an appeal. I said, you know, if you know God's been speaking to you about serving him and taking the gospel beyond your culture, just come and stand at the front. And straight away, a boy, he can only have been about, I don't know, 11 years old. He came, immediately came and stood there, weeping. I mean, really weeping. In fact, weeping so much that the concrete floor, because it was just a concrete floor, slowly a little patch of on the concrete appeared because of his tears. I know this is bizarre, but I photographed the floor afterwards. He had all the concrete and he had this little patch. So he came forward and then others came. And then in the end, I went and spoke to him through, you know, Portuguese interpretation. I said, you know, why did you come? He said, well, in your message, you mentioned Algeria. I said, yes, I did. He said, I've been praying for Algeria for some time. This is an 11-year-old kid in Brazil praying for Algeria. When he hears the country mentioned, God touches his heart and he comes forward. Brazil is one of the countries that is dynamically, powerfully sending out missionaries. It's quite extraordinary. There was a football player, probably some of you remember his name, who some years ago, do you remember he lifted his jersey up and it had I Love Jesus or something, didn't it, on there? Do you remember that? He did that and I got a lot of criticism for doing it. There was a girl in China, she was on our ship. She said, I was always interested in football and this particular guy, anybody remember what his name was? Kaka, okay, Kaka, right. She said, and I really thought he was great. She said, and then I saw him lift up his jersey and he pointed up like that and he said, Jesus, or maybe just said the name Jesus. And she thought, maybe Jesus is the name of his father and he's honouring the memory of his dad by putting his hand in the air, you know? But she wasn't sure. So this girl in China, watching the football match, went to Google, typed in Jesus, and I met her serving on the Logos Hope. Astonishing. Astonishing. There's many incredible stories of what God is doing. We were also in Argentina here. And again, this would have been a country that people were really praying for. And it was to Argentina that a British, I think it was a Shell Oil, working for Shell, he went to Argentina. He was a Christian. And it was a long commitment there that he would be there quite some time. So he decided he would learn Spanish He joined a little, I think it was a Brethren assembly actually while he was there. And he said, I'd like to, because I'm going to be here a long time, can I join in any activities that the church has got? They said, well, we're trying to increase the number of people. And what we're doing is we're going door to door asking if there are any children who would like to come to Sunday school. Would you like to join us on that? He said, okay, I'll come along. We'll see if we can get some. So he started joining this group that were going door to door. And they came to a family. I think there were three kids, two parents, and nobody was attending any church. So he said to the parents, would your children like to come to Sunday school every week? We'll look after them. We'll teach them Bible stories and songs. So the parents said, yeah, okay. So these three kids came along. And one of them, his name was Luis Palau. And, well, you know, the what was he called him? The Billy Graham of South America. He was reached because of a British Christian working in Argentina for a big corporation, joining a local church and reaching out with a local church. Just astonishing. So this is one of the new heartbeat centre of life and vibrancy in the Christian church. Next, please. Oh, yeah, Luis Palau himself. Although Latin America has only had the gospel for 130 years maximum, it has sent out over 10,000 missionaries. And if you come on Logos Hope, you'll quickly find out where the Latinos are. Because they're warm, they're party people, they're friendly, they're smiling, they're noisy. And many of them are dedicated to seeing the gospel go, not just within South America, but beyond to the nations. Next, please. Ah, let's go to one of the other areas. Asia. Wow, so many countries there, aren't there? I wonder which one. Oh, we're going to go to Mongolia. Wow, what's the capital of Mongolia? Ulaanbaatar. Look at this, the ships will never go to Mongolia, okay? We'll never get Logos Hope there. Sandwiched between Russia in the north and China in the south. Why am I showing you a map of Mongolia? Well, because 30 years ago, 1989, we only knew of four Mongolian believers. Four, 1989. How many Mongolian believers today? Well, way in excess of 40,000. And this was one of the great ancient empires, Mongolia. You know, was it Genghis Khan, wasn't it? The guy on the horseback, you know. Frightened the life out of the Chinese. In fact, the Chinese were so frightened, they built a big wall to keep out the Mongolians. The Great Wall of China. Well, today, of course, Mongolia is a small country and China is the superpower. But what is super is the Spirit of God working in just 30 years inside that country of Mongolia. And if you join the ship, you'll meet Mongolians. Please don't ask them their names, because you'll have to listen for about, it seemed like 5 minutes when I asked one. See if they've got a nickname, that's the best thing to do. Great. Next, please. We're going quite fast. Ah, somebody was, we were talking tonight about this country. South Korea. Notice, by the way, how near the capital is with North Korea. If you just, and I've done this, you just drive up to the border, the tension, you can almost feel it in the air. You've got tanks going around and you've got this huge demilitarized zone and you've got, on one side, they've got binoculars looking at other people with binoculars on the other side, you know. What you're looking at, by the way, is the second biggest missionary sending nation in the world. South Korea is number two. What's number one? Yeah, United States of America. Thank God for the United States of America. Their commitment to world mission, I mean, I'm with OM. OM founded by George Verwer from the United States. The other big one, even bigger than OM actually, is YWAM. You've heard of YWAM, haven't you? Young Women After Men. Oh, no, sorry, no. Youth with a Mission, that's right, Youth with a Mission. Anybody know the founder of Youth with a Mission? Lauren Cunningham, that's right. From? United States of America. And the other big one of the 20th century was Wycliffe Bible Translators. Anybody happen to know who founded Wycliffe? Okay, William Cameron Townsend. Sounds like you should be from Scotland. I think his ancestors were. He's from the United States. So these big ones, not to mention Bill Bright of Campus Crusade and, of course, Billy Graham. The 20th century, particularly the second half, has been very much the forward move of the United States of America. But second, coming second, is South Korea, which is an amazing fact because it's quite a small country. I mean, it is. You can sort of drive around here and visit some of the places. They have in Seoul six of the largest denominational churches in the world. So the biggest Presbyterian is there, the biggest Methodist is there, the biggest Pentecostal is there. I mean, these are phenomenal churches. And I had the privilege of speaking in the world's biggest Methodist church. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. How many were there when I was there? 120. You think, 120? It actually, I think it seats something like 25,000. Why were there only 120 there? Was it because they heard I was coming to speak? No. All 120 were missionaries who'd been sent from that church. They'd been called back from all over the world for a mission convention. And I was just one of a whole series of speakers. And you could hear South Koreans. There were people speaking Hindi, speaking Russian, speaking French. Astonishing. South Korea has had a major impact on world mission and continues to do so with some amazing churches of astonishing size. In the Methodist church I was in, if you looked across the building, the people the other side were about the size of a matchstick man, you know? Whereas beside you, there are these two huge screens. So, you know, if you scratch your nose, 30,000 people see you doing it. Just incredible. I've never experienced anything like it. So South Korea, but what an irony. The second biggest missionary sending nation is next to, sadly, the nation that for a long time has had a reputation for most persecuting Christians. If you get the Open Doors Index, you'll know that North Korea is the worst offender. And South Koreans are constantly praying for North Korea. They would love to go in and share the gospel because they speak the same language, but it's not possible. Who's going to get into North Korea and share the gospel? Well, amazingly, there's one nation where I don't think you need a visa to go to North Korea, and where the language is so similar that within 6 months you can be completely fluent, even to a standard that you could actually preach there in North Korea. So which nation is it that can just walk in and out of the country and share the gospel? The answer is Mongolia. So this is missions today. We've got a church in Mongolia that's only 30 years old that is now actively going into North Korea. One guy there has built a Christian university. I don't know how he did it. And these people are sharing the gospel. So this is a flavor of missions today, okay? It's from everywhere to everywhere. It's not just the West to the rest. It's everybody to everybody. It's an exciting day that we live in and what God is doing. Next, please. Oh, what can I say about this country? Just incredible. The last thing I did, we were in Argentina on Logos Hope, and I went to speak in a little church, and they allocated me on my team two Chinese girls. There was me and two Chinese girls. We went to this church, and amazingly, they wanted a Q&A session from the church. And when these Chinese girls started sharing their experience, the church had never heard anything like it. This Q&A session went on for ages, and they were really very moved and very challenged by what these Chinese girls were sharing, all, of course, through Spanish interpretation. And I can guarantee you, if you went back to that church and you asked any of them what I spoke on, they wouldn't know. But what they would remember is the testimony of those Chinese girls. And, you know, I said to one of the girls, I said, In our church in Dartford, we've sent a girl from Northern Ireland to China. She married a Chinese guy. They had a great ministry, but now they've had to come back because you probably know it's getting more and more. How did Ingrid share it? She said, the cage door is closing in China. So they've had to come back from China. And so I was telling this Chinese guy, I said, it's so sad. She said, why is it sad? I said, well, because the missionaries are having to come back. She said, we can survive without missionaries. She said, we're strong enough. We can cope with it. We don't need missionaries. I was expecting a bit of sympathy from her, you know, somebody from our church who went there and had to come back home. But no, they're up for it. They really are for what God is going to do. In fact, they're going to set out on evangelism and they want to reach the world for Jesus. I mean, when you look at the Chinese church, it really is, to me, quite staggering what's happening there and the people that there are there. You're seeing Christ-like character in leadership. They treasure scripture. They embrace suffering. They do fearless evangelism. And their dependence on God is in every situation. And they have a deep commitment to a life of prayer. I just feel I'm in another league. We had a prayer night on the ship and the Chinese were leading it. And we had some people ending up in tears. Never experienced anything like it. And they're ready to go, whatever the cost, they're ready to go and share the gospel. And I'm now going to show you a testimony from the Chinese church, okay? Can you put the next slide on? Look at these words. The hostile nations we enter may torture us and starve us, but they can do no more than we experienced in our own country for many decades under communism. We're not afraid to bleed, for our bodies are merely temporary tents to be used in the Lord's service. We're not only ready to die for the gospel, we are expecting it. Wow. What sort of language is that? That's the level. You know, they can handle persecution. That country's faith was born and refined in persecution. So it's not something unusual to them. They can cope with it in a way that the likes of me and maybe you would just capitulate, you know, knees trembling and have some sort of breakdown. But no, they're going to go for it. They're committed to taking the gospel to the ends of the earth. And I'll tell you this, what we've seen of the American church in World Mission will be nothing compared to what we'll see from the Chinese church. I think we'll see the greatest move of the gospel around the world coming from China by the end, probably, of this century. So keep your eyes open and see what's going to happen. Next, please. India. Again, what can I say about India? I've had the privilege of being there, I think, over 50 times. We've got 6 or 7 projects now running in India. It's just incredible what God is doing. In fact, let's go and have a look at a radio report, can we please, from India, just to see what's happening amongst one tribe. Television report, I mean.
Even though India is now a major economic power, many people there still live in tribes. Traditionally, most of them have been Hindus.
That's right, but the untold story now is that a major shift is taking place in one of the largest tribal communities. Hundreds of men, women and children are now being baptized as Christians. Here's my report from the highlands of central India.
Ask Dinesh Sur why so many tribal people are accepting Jesus Christ and he gets teary-eyed.
When you do God's work for years and begin to see the fruits of your labor, it is overwhelming. You see the changed lives, you see the eternal happiness on the faces of people, and how can it not move me?
Here, in a corner of Rajasthan, where the majority follow Hinduism, a Christian chorus is rising.
The transformation is almost immediate. Families stop praying to the ancestors, they stop drinking, they stop their witchcraft. Their entire life is turned upside down when they accept Jesus.
and Dinesh Sur is part of the reason why so many are turning to Christ.
For 10 years, Pastor Dinesh served in a big city, very much like this one. But then God tugged on his heart and told him he had to go back to his village, go back to his roots, go back to his own people and share the good news of Jesus Christ.
I was like Jonah in the Bible. I didn't want to live in my village. I wanted to serve God in the city where things are easier. I wanted to reach others with the gospel, not my own people.
Sure points to Sohan Lal's life as fruit of his decision to return.
One day Pastor Dinesh told me about Jesus Christ. He told me that if I put my trust in him, I would be healed, that my life would be different. I did.
Sohan Lal joined 178 of his tribe's people recently at the edge of this river, not too far from their village. Here, they were baptized by Pastor Dinesh.
I know all these men and women personally. I know what their lives were like before they met Christ. Now to be part of the spiritual milestone in their lives is an enormous privilege.
Dhruv Bahai has been waiting for this day with great excitement.
After I accepted Christ, I stopped drinking, I stopped smoking, and I stopped getting into fights. Getting baptized was my way to show the community that I'm a changed man. Today, Jesus Christ is my Savior.
Manu was among the dozens of women who also got dunked in the river that day.
I feel very happy after my baptism and thankful I received Christ in my heart. I will now follow him the rest of my life.
And not just her. Her husband and children also decided to follow Christ after Pastor Dinesh spent several occasions with them.
My family is blessed because of Christ and because someone was willing to come and share the gospel with us.
Pastor Dinesh is a member of the Bil community, one of the largest tribes found in the central states of India. Dinesh says foreign missionaries have been ministering in this area for over 135 years and have never seen the results he's witnessing today. Christians are still a minority within a minority in these parts. However, reports claim that as many as 300,000 have become believers in just the last 10 years, many of them from among the Bil tribe.
We have 42 house prayer groups meeting in about 22 villages. We also have 32 workers from our church going from village to village as evangelists sharing the gospel. In the coming year, my goal is to send out missionaries to neighboring states to reach other Bil villages.
Jivani Karadai is one of those who travel from village to village. When she's not on the road, you'll find this spry 65-year-old also co-leading a house group with Pastor Dinesh. On the day CBN News met her, she and dozens of believers were having church under this tree.
Our group is getting so large, we don't have enough space in my house.
Karadai's testimony is the reason this meeting is even happening.
About 6 years ago, she used to roam the streets of this remote village, in essence as a mad woman. She used to walk around naked. But then she had an encounter with this man, Jesus Christ, and today she leads a thriving church here in Rajasthan.
The villagers used to make fun of me. People said I was cursed. Then I met Pastor Dinesh and he prayed for me and I was healed. I was delivered.
Pastor Dinesh says these testimonies are just another reminder for him how important it is to obey and trust God.
I am living the fruits of my decision to come back to my village. Is it easy? No. Do we face challenges? Yes. But we have Christ to lean on. He is all we need to see change among my people.
George Thomas, CBN News, Rajasthan, India.
Great story. George, Pastor Dinesh, he's converting all these people from Hindus to Christians. Is he facing any resistance?
He does, because the local villagers obviously see him as a threat. They say, why are you doing this? But the reality, Wendy, is that when you begin to see the transformation that's happened in a particular person's life, you see families that are addicted to alcohol, one day they suddenly give up. Mm-hmm. Families that are engaged in traditional worship and ancestral worship. The entire life is turned upside down.
What about the lady that used to run around naked?
Yeah, incredible.
She had, people thought she was cursed, and then she had an encounter with Jesus Christ. She got totally transformed, and
absolutely.
And that
there is the example of the miracle that's taking place amongst the Bil community. Here you have this woman who walked around for so many years. She walked around mad. She was yelling. She was cursing at people, and people used to make fun of her. And then she met Jesus Christ, and all of a sudden, almost like night and day, she was totally transformed, and the villagers began to say, wait a minute, what happened to What happened to Giovanni? Where is Giovanni? We used to know what Giovanni
reminds
was
me of Bible
like.
Stories where, you know,
absolutely.
They were lame and now they're walking. I was blind and now I see.
Exactly. And they see this radical transformation and they say, wait a minute, who is it that changed your life? Mm. What happened? Was it some medicine you took? Was it some witchcraft that you performed on your family or on yourself? What is it? And then she says, no, I met Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ transformed my life. And as a result of that dramatic testimony, today she has this thriving church in a remote part of Rajasthan.
Oh, great report, as always. Thank you so much.
Terrific. Thank you.
Great, isn't it? And I've seen this sort of thing in India. One of our groups that we support with Amen, it was just a few guys together reaching out. They now have got 600 full-time workers, all Indians, all supported from within India. It is amazing. I wish sometimes I could bring people like you with me on some of these trips, you know. It would do you so much good. If you get a chance to do something short-term or to get out there and see what God is doing, it's transformational. Sometimes we're in our own world where perhaps we don't see so much happening. I have to say, that's not normal compared to what is happening today. In the global south, we are seeing an explosion of the gospel. Of course, there are problems and difficulties, but we're seeing multiple numbers turn to Jesus Christ. It's absolutely wonderful, and we're very encouraged. Well, we must bring this to a close. Could we have the next one, please? Because our time has gone. Oh, yeah. The population of India increases by 1 million people every 3 weeks. 45,000 every day, 2,000 every hour, that's one baby born every 2 seconds. Well, the harvest is plentiful, isn't it? So you see, the population is increasing, so we need to see what's happening. Next. Yeah, just click through the next one, can you? And the next. And the next. And the next. I haven't got time to do all these. Just this question, you know. That I think we all need to ask ourselves, where does God need me to be? You know, does he need you to be here and to stay? And probably for most of you, yes, great. That's where he's called you. But if he hasn't called you to stay, then there really is only one other option, isn't there? He's called you to take this transforming message out of your community, sent by your church, to the nations that are still waiting to hear the good news. Well, one day in the future, I guess all of us, or most of us, are going to be in heaven. And I just want you to imagine for a moment, you're in heaven. This is just imagination. And you're meeting maybe some of the people that you knew on the earth. And you're hearing their stories of how God has used you or used others to bring them to Christ. So, with that in mind, does this thing move a little bit? Yeah, let's move this over here. Let's see this portrayed, this song, which is called Thank You.